Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family, finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. And now, here's Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to this fantastic edition of Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donnellan and from Maria Bailey. It is always a pleasure to be with you. And where in the heck did April go? I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but it is just getting busier and busier. And it doesn't hurt that, there were two birthdays in my household, Easter, spring break, and it just gobbled up the month. So here we are at the end of April. Hopefully spring weather is blooming where you are, and it's been beautiful here in sunny South Florida. It's about 73 today. It's really hard to sit inside when you really want to just go sit outside and do some outdoor learning and working, as we say. So thank goodness for Wi-Fi. Maybe I'll do that after the show. So we've got a great show lined up. A disconnected kids nutrition plan. That's for anyone who has a child who has ADHD, dyslexia, autism, any kind of neurological disorders. We're going to be talking to a doctor who wrote a book about a nutrition plan that's really enhancing their learning and focus for the children with those disorders. And that's going to be a great segment. We'll be talking to the Unboxed Mom, Linda Scruggs. And she has actually a fantastic blog, but she's going to be actually talking about a critical role she played in being the caregiver for her father as he battled illness at the end of his life. So that's going to be a great segment. Thomas Gagliano is joining us. He's going to be talking about this one, and I'm not even going to talk the title of the book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. I'm just going to leave that one at that. We'll let him tell us all about that topic. And Dr. Amy Tutor will be talking about guilt in the age of natural parenting. And we'll close the show by taking a look at a book called Broken Three Times, which is actually about the broken foster care system and the state of foster care in the United States. It's a very important topic and one that's going to be a really interesting segment to close the show. And before we take our first guest, we will be thanking Premama, our sponsor. And Premama is the prenatal vitamin you can drink. And if you take a prenatal vitamin or are thinking about taking one and you don't want to take those big horse pills, take a look at Premama. It's a powder formula and you pour it into your favorite beverage or smoothie. And it's your daily vitamin intake without struggling on the big fat horse pills. And it is also available now as a fertility and a lactation formula. So it's got all the doctor recommended vitamins and nutrients and so important for you and your baby. And you can find these products at CVS, Target, Amazon, specialty stores. And then we just heard last week that Premama is really branching out and they will be available at GNC stores and Sprouts, which is actually a store that's mostly in the Western U.S. We don't have any here in Florida, but it looks like an awesome natural foods grocery store. So take a look. But find your store locator at drinkpremama.com and also follow Drink Premama on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And the other thing I really mentioned really quickly is that in starting Mother's Day, which is actually just around the corner. So yay, moms, we get to celebrate our special day. It's National Women's Health Week that week, and we have a partner in Colgate Total Products, and we want to recognize Colgate Total for their participation in National Women's Health Week. So stay tuned to Mom Talk Radio in the coming weeks, and on Facebook we'll be posting a lot about that celebration of the importance of women's health. So take a listen to that on the following show. And then really quickly, Peter and the Wolf in Hollywood. It's a new app that's launching this week, and it's about the classic 80-year-old tale. Turns 80 this year, Prokofiev's symphony he wrote in 1936. And Peter and the Wolf in Hollywood, it's a new app for kids. It's available on iPhone and iPad, and it's really beautifully illustrated and music and by the a really fabulous youth orchestra in Germany. So check it out, peterandthewolfinhollywood.com. And when we come back, we're joined by Dr. Robert Melillo, the Disconnected Kids Nutrition Plan. We'll be talking about it right after this quick break.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
This segment of Mom Talk Radio kicks off a fabulous show with Dr. Robert Melillo. He is the author of the latest book, The Disconnected Kids Nutrition Plan, proven strategies to enhance learning and focus for children with autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and other neurological disorders. He's an internationally known chiropractic neurologist, professor, researcher, and the list goes on and on. So I'll let you tell us a little bit about the book. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Sure. Our book came out April 5th, and this is my fifth book, actually, in the last 7 years. The first book was Disconnected Kids, came out in 2009, which really described what is actually happening in the brain of a child with ADHD or OCD or Tourette's or autism, based on my 20 years of research and understanding what the problem is as a clinician and as a parent of kids with issues. And then also, we put together a plan as to how to deal with it. This book is really the last iteration of that, and really it's focused on the diet and nutrition component of it. As you know, any family, any parent that has children with some sort of neurological issue, usually you have a lot of immune issues, dietary issues, leaky gut issues, as well as excessively picky eaters. So this book is about explaining what is actually happening in the brain. And the uniqueness of this book is that it not only talks about many things like leaky gut and food sensitivities and elimination diets and supplements, but it also really takes the perspective that the cause of those problems really start in the brain, that the imbalances in the brain, which is what causes ADHD and autism and OCD, that also has an effect on the body, and it causes imbalances in the digestive system and the immune system and the hormone system, and that is what leads to those issues.
That's fascinating. So you just mentioned a key word that just made a flag go off, hormones. What age range can we look at for this book? Because I have a child I would love to read this book to help me handle nutrition for him. He's a teenager. Is it too late?
No, not at all. Not at all. As a matter of fact, even adults, I've
right.
been working with adults and children for many years. And what I find is that when you look at things like what we call developmental milestones and primitive reflexes, these are things that are supposed to go away in the first year that allow us to move our body and that lead to those developmental milestones, like when a child rolls over and crawls and walks and speaks and does all of the other things really from a developmental trajectory. What we know is that, 40% of adults are still walking around with many of these issues that really go back to childhood. So,
right.
these are things that really go on and can affect you for your whole life.
Yes, and you hear it all the time. You hear people, adults with ADHD or et cetera, that
right.
you have to. So the book really doesn't have any particular age limitations necessarily. So give us a little an hint then about, let's say, mealtime and food sensitivities, or like as you said, there's,
right.
Again, spectrum.
There's a lot of things unique in this book, and it's a unique perspective when you start to think about these things really from a brain perspective. What it means is that, you have to deal with the brain issue, but it also means that when you deal with the brain issue, that many of these other dietary and nutritional problems can go away permanently, which is not what most people are led to believe.
That's
but
correct.
Other things, like, for instance, an obsessively picky eater that these children are, and then if they're on ADHD meds where they don't feel hungry, can really be difficult. So many parents are trying to behaviorally manage that with all different types of techniques, and quite frankly, it's horrible, it's difficult, and it often doesn't work. What they don't realize is that in most of these children, the reason why they're such picky eaters is because they don't have a normal sense of smell and taste. In our centers, we'll work with 8 to 10,000 children this year alone. We've done tens of thousands of tests where every child that comes into our centers, we actually assess their sense of smell. And what we found is that 90% of them, they have a completely abnormal or even completely absent sense of smell. Many children
really?
With autism, they don't even know how to sniff. If you ask them to smell something, they'll blow out. And what happens is they choose food by how it feels in their mouth or how it looks or its
texture,
not by
right.
taste and smell.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that, you try to get them, and these children we know will be what we call problem feeders, which means they'll literally starve themselves rather than eat certain foods. The only way to change that is when you change the brain, when you actually stimulate their sense of smell along with other networks in the brain by doing very targeted brain stimulation to the right side of the brain or the left side of the brain, what happens is not only does their smell change and their taste change and become more normalized, and then they start to choose foods in a normal way. But what also happens, which is fascinating, is their social skills dramatically change, because the basic networks in the brain and the right side of the brain for socialization and nonverbal communication, the basis of it is also the sense of smell networks, which is what we see in animals, right? Animals socialize by sense of smell. So these are some of the things that, again, nobody's looking at. I've even had children that have gone to some of the top feeding clinics in the world because they're, you know, failure to thrive, and they've right. never checked their sense of smell. If your child doesn't smell, the parent doesn't know it, right? They don't complain. They don't come. If they never had a sense of smell from the time they were born, they don't come up to you and say, hey. But many parents will tell me that my other children will come in and comment when I'm cooking food, and I didn't realize my autistic child or my ADHD child didn't. And then one day, you know, when you were working with them, all of a sudden one day they came in and they said, hey, you know, I smell cookies all of a sudden. And they go, wow, you know, like you never smelled this before. And their social skills are dramatically different.
Yeah, and it's funny because from infancy they test eyesight, hearing, you know, all that, but we don't taste that. That's a very important smell. Smell is a very important sensory test they should do. That's interesting. So we have to wrap. So give us about 20 seconds of where we can find your information and the book, et cetera.
Well, the book is obviously on Amazon and any major bookstore. They can also find out about my work through drrobertmelillo.com. And also, if they want to find out about our Brain Balance Centers, which we have over 110 centers across the country now that are learning centers working specifically with kids with learning challenges, they can go to brainbalancecenters.com.
Okay, and it's Melillo. It's M-E-L-I-L-L-O.com. Thank you so much. What a fascinating topic. And love your work and good luck with the book. And after this quick break, we'll be joined by Linda Scruggs, and we'll talk to her. It's the Spotlight on Moms. Stay with us. It's my favorite segment of the show. We shine a spotlight on moms. And today, I'm pleased to introduce Linda Scruggs. She has two children, 5 and 8, and she blogs at theunboxedmom.com and on Twitter at Momtility. And as I said at the beginning of the show, Linda has obviously wears many hats, but one that recently got her featured on the Huffington Post was her experience as a hospice nurse for her own father. So let's talk about that. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you so much.
A business blog and a personal blog. Tell us a little bit about those, but then we want to talk about your dad.
My personal blog is basically focused on family health and parenting. And for family health, it's where my heart is as a nurse. I've had experience through the whole life cycle. So I focus on fertility and pregnancy and trying to conceive, which is what I do professionally. And then also just my experiences being a hospice nurse for my father, as well as having done some home health care. So I try to cover everything, including, you know, the ear infections and things that all the moms experience with the young kids.
Right. And I just heard on NPR recently something about, it was a whole segment on caregivers who've had to drop everything and take care of an aging or a sick spouse, and in this case, a parent. So tell us a little bit about that.
Baby boomers are getting older. And so for aging parents and for myself being my father's hospice nurse, it's such a difficult subject to broach. But I think that if it can be done, you know, in the ideal world in advance of any issues, it makes it so much easier, and you can kind of bring humor into it that way and make it a little bit sort of lighthearted, whereas when you get to the point where you really have to have a serious conversation, it makes it that much more difficult.
Right. So had you had that conversation about with your dad or with your, you know, your family about your dad?
You know, in a lighthearted way, we joked around about it, but we really, he was, you know, a marathon runner. He, you know, ate oatmeal for 30 years and was very, probably the healthiest out of everyone in the family. So it was a complete shock when he was diagnosed. And it was a very serious diagnosis and prognosis. So we knew that there wasn't going to be a lot of time. So we had a lot of difficult conversations, and I learned so much through the process, not just, you know, on a personal level for growth, but also as a nurse. In how you can help family members, get to the point where they feel comfortable making their wishes known, being able to express them, and what we can do, you know, as members of a family to be able to communicate with them and make it a little bit easier, because it's inevitable. So the more you talk about it, you know, in some ways it makes it not just more helpful for the person going through it, the aging parent, but for ourselves.
Right. And actually, my dad's 86, and my brothers and I, thank God, we're close. We're tight about, you know, we're tight about everything. But it's a hard discussion to have. And they, of course, they were like, they told me, you go talk to dad about what, you know, I had to have a discussion with him. And my dad's actually, knock wood, in very good health.
Right.
Thank you, Lord. He's just great.
Yeah.
But I can see signs, you know, he's slipping, and, you know, there's just some abilities are a little, you know, senses are a little dulled sometimes. So we just have to have, and it's a continuing discussion, right? It's not
It's a fluid situation, of course.
Right.
And that's a key point, is assessing the situation. Is a lot of times they can't notice it themselves, but as family members, you begin to assess whether or not they might be struggling with certain things like their life tasks, you know, their activities of daily living, the dressing, the driving, the being able to get around, being able to keep up with any medications, if they have any medications. The minute that becomes maybe just a little bit of an issue, that's the time to really get in there and be able to start talking about these things. And I think it's about reassuring them and empowering them to know that they're in control of their situation, and family members are just wanting to support and carry out what they hope for. There's a few steps I'd love to share that I think can really help promote the process and make it a little bit more smooth, you know, because it can be a rough road, especially when there's something that's being faced that's scary that's going on from a health perspective. But there's definitely some ways that it can be made a little bit easier.
Is it covered in the Huffington Post or on your own blog?
You know, on my blog itself, I'm going to be putting together just a checklist that I'll probably go live with next week, and it'll be downloadable as a PDF, as a printable, so that's something that can be used as almost a cheat sheet.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Yes, we need that. We need that.
Mm-hmm.
I know, again, with a parent that's, you know, both my parents actually, but my dad's 80s, he's the oldest. So my thing is with his food. Is he able to feed himself now? You know, that's where you find a lot of then health issues come out of that, because he can't feed. He doesn't eat healthy. He just thinks, oh, I'll go get an egg, you know, an egg McMuffin. And I'm like, no, you know.
Absolutely. So, and I think, you know, understandably, it's our nature to get defensive and try to protect ourselves if somebody, you know, they don't want to show maybe vulnerability. And so being able to sit down, having sort of a team where you can, if you have close members of your family that'll work together, that's ideal, obviously. But being able to sit down with them and just really have a heart-to-heart conversation and explaining that you're there to want to, you know, help make it easier, and let's talk about this now rather than wait until we have to talk about it.
Then it's an emergency, right?
Yeah.
Linda, you blog at unboxmom.com and Twitter at momtility. Thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio. And when we come back, we're joined by Thomas Gagliano, who just wrote the book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
It's a serious topic. We're going to be talking to how to talk to your kids about drugs with Thomas Gagliano, the author of his newest title, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. The cleanup cost can last a lifetime. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the book, where you came up. This is your second book. You also wrote The Problem Was Me. So this is your second book. Where did the idea come from, and when was it published?
Well, The Problem Is Me turned out to be a bestseller, and it's really about my story and the story of other men and women that I've helped, you know, create a better life for themselves. And I came from a very discouraging childhood. You know, I had a dad that was an alcoholic, and if he didn't come home at a certain time, it meant he was going to come home drunk, and it meant he was going to hurt someone. So I was the oldest of four brothers that sat at the top of the stairs shaking, wondering when I was going to have to pounce on my dad and pull him off my mother. So what I did in my life is I used what I needed to hear as a child, what I would have liked to have heard. And what I did eventually was give my children really what my father couldn't give me. And that was a safe place, a place where they could share their feelings, whatever those feelings were.
Well, that's great. So then the newest book then that has evolved because of your experiences as a dad, sounds like.
Sure. Sure. Well, I could run through a quick example with my son, and I think it sums up the major points we need to do with our children. One is, okay, we need to create a safe place for our children where our children can share their feelings, whatever those feelings and struggles are. So my son comes to me last year, and he says to me, "Dad, some of my friends smoke pot." He's in eighth grade. He's in middle school. He says, "I'm real curious how that would sound." Now, I'm a recovering addict. Could you imagine how I felt when he said that? I wanted to say, "Okay, go in your room till you're 26, and I'll let you out." That,
exactly.
That was my first reaction.
Exactly.
But I said first is I created a safe place. I asked him, "What do you know about pot? What do you know about drugs?" And he told me, "What do you know about addiction?" So I didn't judge his feelings. I let him share his feelings. His feelings are not right and wrong. They're really how a kid feels. And I validated him. And I said, well, the next thing I did was I was curious with him. Let's find out about weed and pot. And we went on the internet and we spoke about it. The next thing I did is I told him consequences. I said, you know, if you choose to break the law, you've chosen to get in real trouble and maybe go to jail. The choices that children make, they need to know it's their choices that create the consequences. It's just what life is. Our choice, you don't put your toys away, you can't play with your toys. So I started to talk a little bit about being curious about what he knew about drugs, and I started to tell him the consequences of playing with drugs, and I again want him to share his struggles with me, not to solicit that information from someone else. Long story short, he came to me a couple of weeks later, and I said, "Hey, what went on with the weed, with the pot?" He said, "You know, Dad, I just don't hang out with those kids anymore." Now,
good.
Here's the moral of the story.
Right.
I could have tried to control his actions, twisted his arm, and said, "Don't do this." But you know what? If we only try to control our children's behavior, it's not going to work. When they get old enough, they're going to do what they want to do. I tell parents, rather than do that, supply your children with the tools to control their own behavior. Get them into healthy, healthy habits which create healthy decisions. That's a child that's ready to face the world. Don't jump in all the time and get them out of their own messes. Let them learn how to get out of their own messes. And also, don't overindulge your children. Learn to teach them to share their feelings, not to just go and buy a video game and numb out their feelings, because that's what addiction really is. So all of these little pieces are really what creates a child that's ready to face the world with integrity in a productive way.
The biggest thing you keep saying, which I agree with, and I think it's a great tip, is it's just a safe place. Don't automatically try to just jump in and control everything and go to the school and start, you know. But we have so many helicopter parents. What do you say to them who are constantly trying to control and or rescue children from situations when they're children?
I tell all parents like that, and I facilitate parenting groups, by the way, as well as men's groups. I tell them this. If your child doesn't know how to get out of their own messes, they're going to get to a point in their life where you can't jump in. They're not going to have enough self-esteem. They're not going to have coping mechanisms. And guess who they're going to be mad at, parent? The one that rushed in. And the parent is going to turn around someday and say, "I don't get it. Why is he or she mad at me? I was always there for them. I was, you know, you were there for them, but you didn't teach them and build self-esteem inside of them to teach them proper coping mechanisms. And because they don't have that, they're going to get mad at the one that always rushed in. So don't be surprised if that happens.
Being able to take failure, it's not a bad thing. It's okay. And I think that's what ex-parents, we just don't want to see either see that happen.
Fails.
But it ends up being their best lessons, I think.
Everyone fails. You see,
right.
I grew up in a childhood that if I made a mistake, I felt like I was a mistake. That's why I could never lose. I had no self-compassion. I was a bully as a kid. We don't want to give our children those messages. They need to know that they can make a mistake. It doesn't mean they are a mistake. And they can fail at times. It doesn't mean they are a failure. They can identify themselves as a failure. They have to look at mistakes as an opportunity to grow. We all fail. That's what I don't like about giving trophies to everybody in a Little League team, because it's teaching mediocrity. And children have to learn that failure is a part of life. We all fail. How do you deal with failing? Very important.
I just actually had a discussion with my daughters. My middle daughter is a volleyball player, and you know, she was in this tournament this last weekend in Tampa, and they had this. It's now gold, silver, and bronze. And then in bronze, and I said, "That's like a participation trophy. And why are we doing that?" And both kids turned to me and they said, "We get them all the time." They agreed with me, because actually she's in eighth grade and she gets it. And she said, "I don't really want that," you know. So I was glad to hear that, because I think it's just more realistic that you're not going to get a trophy for just stepping onto you know, you have to perform and perform well, or at least show up, you know?
Show up and try as best you can. I tell parents all the time, too, you know, when you celebrate your child's triumphs, be careful the way you say it. I mean, if I say to my one child, I'm so proud of you, you got an A on that test, and his right. brother or sister are listening, and they can't get A's. Not everybody can get A's. I mean, that's the way
this
it is.
True.
They're going to hear that as a very defective statement. But I can always say to them, I'm proud you tried your hardest. You know, all children can't get A's, but all children could try their hardest. So it's
Absolutely.
So important. The childhood messages we give to our children are going to someday dictate the intimacy they have or don't have, their parenting skills, the careers they choose. I mean, all of these things are tied into childhood messages, and that's my mantra, and that's what I always talk about. My website is called theproblemwasme.com. You can
okay.
get either of my books on my website, or you can go to Amazon and you can purchase either book on Amazon.com.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
And when we come back, we're joined by Dr. Amy Tudor. She is going to be talking about pushing back and eliminating guilt in this age of natural parenting. Stay with us.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
On this segment of Mom Talk Radio, we're going to be looking at the other side of the coin of natural parenting. Not necessarily that it's a bad thing, but when you are surrounded by the mom who had a natural birth and is a baby-wearing, breastfeeding mom, but you couldn't do any of those things, what do you do? A lot of us feel guilty. I know I did. And I'm talking to Dr. Amy Tudor, and she is the author of Push Back, Guilt in the Age of Natural Parenting. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And your best part is that you blog at, it's called theskepticalob.com. So tell us a little bit about that blog.
Well, in the blogging world, a skeptic is somebody who demands proof for things. So if people make claims, you want to see the scientific evidence. And I'm an obstetrician, so I chose the skeptical OB, and I have a reputation for being somewhat controversial, so the fact that skeptical OB's initials are SOB seemed kind of appropriate.
That's fabulous. So let's talk about your book. You address the guilt some moms can feel because of the expectations, I think, and sometimes, and as you would probably say, unrealistic expectations of the natural childbirth movement. So tell us a little bit about just the concepts of the book and in the as a result, again, of the guilt that we might feel.
Well, I think it's become a growing problem over the last two decades where women have been encouraged to judge themselves by the function of their reproductive organs. So they've been encouraged to judge themselves by what happens during childbirth, by whether or not they breastfeed, by whether they have their baby in bed with them at night as part of attachment parenting. And if those things work for you, that's great. But they don't make you a better mother than anybody else. They're just one of many possible excellent choices on how to raise a child.
I think I love you because I agree. I completely agree. I had to have three C-sections. I did nurse, but breastfeed, but I couldn't sleep if my kids were in the bed with me. It made me crazy. And I figured my sleep was better. I would be better off in the morning without being a zombie.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the interesting thing about all these natural parenting philosophies is that either they are directly contradicted by the scientific evidence or they far outstrip the scientific evidence. So having the baby sleep in bed with you, there's no evidence that that improves your attachment to your baby.
Right.
There's no evidence that it does anything besides disrupt your sleep. And so why are we telling women to do that? I think the reason that we're telling women to do that is we want them to have no time for anything else but mothering.
Right. And we have no other role in life, which is completely unrealistic.
It's completely unrealistic. And I think in many ways these philosophies are a backlash to women's emancipation. Instead of trying to take power away from women, they've tried to convince women that their power is in giving birth and in breastfeeding. And
mm-hmm.
that's great if you believe that, but it's not great if you want to be empowered by things outside of child rearing.
Right. And honestly, there's nothing wrong. Natural childbirth and all, it's great if you can do it. But if you can't, you should not be made to feel guilty. And the mom shaming that goes on is sometimes just ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember the girls in the cafeteria in middle school who wouldn't let you sit at their table?
Right. At the cool table.
At the cool table. And they're now patrolling the playground to determine who's a cool mom and who isn't. And the way they've chosen to do that is by these various processes of parenting. They don't do it based on the outcome. They don't look and see whose child is well-adjusted and give her a point for being a good mom. They just go down the list and tick off what you've done that they've done. And I can appreciate why they do it. You know, my children are adults, but I still remember the parenting is very, very hard, and there's not a lot of positive feedback. You know, when you send your three-year-old to time out, he doesn't come out and say, oh, thank you so much for encouraging the growth of my self-control.
I learned my lesson, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't get a lot of positive feedback on a day-to-day basis. And wouldn't it be awesome if there was a recipe and we knew that we were fantastic moms just by following the recipe? Well, that's really what natural parenting is about. You don't have to look at how anybody's kid turns out. You just judge them by what they did.
Right, right. So basically when you talk about in the book, what's in the book?
There are stories from people who have written to me. I get a lot of mail privately from women who are really beating themselves up over their C-sections or having an epidural or having difficulty breastfeeding. And I always say that, first of all, I did those things. So I had four vaginal births, two with epidurals, two without. I breastfed all four of my children. The term attachment parenting didn't exist when my children were small. But if it had, I could have been labeled an attachment parent. But that's because those things worked for me and my children. I would never say that made me a better mother than anybody else.
Right.
And there's nothing more humbling than having adult children to realize how little control you actually have over how they turn out.
That's right.
All you can do is love them.
That's right. That's right. Love them hard. I have two teenagers, and I think it's interesting because even I think about my own childhood, and I think what I thought was so critical and important to them, they don't even remember. The one thing they might remember, my teenagers are, of course, snarky, you know, and they say, Mom, don't you remember when I was 8 and I did, and you did that? And I was like, no, I don't remember that. But that's what the things that we think are important are really not it. So tell us where we can find your book, Push Back Guilt in the Age of Natural Parenting.
The book is everywhere. You can get it on Amazon, any bookstore. It comes in electronic edition and also an audio edition.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Doctor, and good luck with your work. I love it, and I will be following your blog as I love this. I love the topic. And when we come back, we'll close the show by talking with Joan Kaufman. She is the author of Broken Three Times, A Story of Child Abuse in America. It's all about the welfare system. We'll be right back. To close the show today, we're going to be talking about a very serious subject, and that is the child welfare system in the United States. And I'm joined by Joan Kaufman, PhD. She's the author of Broken Three Times, A Story of Child Abuse in America. She's the director of research at the Center for Child and Family Traumatic Stress at Kennedy Krieger Institute and has joint faculty appointments in psychiatry and School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. An impressive resume. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the book.
It chronicles one family's life through the child welfare system. It starts off with snapshots of the mother's own abusive childhood, then fast forwards to her first involvement with the Connecticut Child Protective Services System when her children were 10 and 11. And over the course of the book, we see the children in 5 years pass through almost 20 placements while the mother is struggling with addiction, being in one violent relationship after the next. And it really highlights kind of the complexity of these issues and how to help these families and sort of tries to do a balance between having you kind of walk their shoes, what it's like to have multiple changes in placements, and then also what are some new promising practices and how can we make a difference in these children and families' lives.
Right. So how did you come across that? Did you have personal interaction with them, or how did this particular family's struggles come to your attention?
So before I came to the Center for Child and Family Traumatic Stress, Kennedy Krieger and Hopkins, I was at Yale University for 18 years, and I directed a program in research in child abuse and neglect, which really went from neurobiology to social policy. Individuals with a history of abuse are at risk not just for psychiatric substance use problems, but physical health problems, diabetes, even cancer. And so, you know, we work to try to understand best policies and practices, but also, you know, genetic mechanisms, neuroimaging, a little bit of everything. And this one family, the kids had been in a study evaluating a program for children who entered out-of-home care. They were part of our gene-environment interactions, understanding why some kids get depressed, others don't, imaging and PTSD. And so I had seen them through kind of multiple lenses. And I actually had a more than five-year moratorium on our research in Connecticut because people got nervous that we were getting genes from kids in foster care. And unlike other special populations like children with autism where parents are clamoring for state-of-the-art biomedical research, people were afraid that somehow it would stigmatize. And, you know, what we're learning is it's very dynamic. There's nothing fixed. There's nothing guaranteed either about genetics or about a history of abuse, but that we have to really take all our best tools from, you know, our social policies to understanding molecular genetics to know how to, you know, help each child reach their potential no matter what they've been through.
Right. It's such a complex issue, as you just stated. I mean, there's so many factors involved in the success or failure of a family in this in the system.
Right. And addiction is one of these huge things that just leaves so many children trapped in the system. And, you know, we haven't been abundantly successful in knowing how to help parents who struggle with those sorts of issues.
Right. And then what their children do in the interim or while they're getting treatment. Oh, yes. So you how did it end up with this family? Are you allowed to say?
So I sort of tracked them down, and I have to confess I wasn't sure I would be able to find the mom. She had a, you know, multiple decade history of crack use, history of multiple violent relationships. I fortunately found her at a good point when she was in recovery, and they agreed to let me tell their story, and I got 1,800 pages of Child Protective Services records. I went to the many places they lived. I did interviews with a now young adult children, former foster parents, former therapists, and really try to kind of take the reader through, you know, through their course in the system and seeing times where, you know, it's like you can't make it up. Some of, you know, and it's tragic. And I think so often we see these things in a snapshot. You know, there's a report that's in the paper, but we don't know what happens over time. And so really trying to kind of follow them over time and see where we could have really made a, we could have made a difference. And in many ways, the system really did fail these young children.
So tell our listeners where we can find your book.
It's on Amazon.com, and you could get it in either, you know, an e-book or you can get the hard copy. It's called Broken Three Times, A Story of Child Abuse in America. And my name again is Joan Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, so Broken Three Times. And so it's also available on iTunes if you like, but easy to get. And 50% of the profit actually is going to benefit the family. So I'm hoping we can earn enough to make an iota of a difference in their lives because they're still struggling in many ways.
Joan Kaufman, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck and best of luck with the rest of your work that you continue to do. And that will close this edition of Mom Talk Radio. Maria will be back behind the mic next week. Check us out on Facebook at Mom Talk Radio, and of course, follow us at Twitter at Mom Talk Radio. You'll get all kinds of updates on what Maria's been doing and where she's going next. So have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week.